Next is in the matter of John Charles Allen. We'll take appearances.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chief Justice, Associate Justices of the Court, Ryan Moriarty, Assistant Ethics Counsel on behalf of the Office of Attorney Ethics.
Mr. Allen?
John Charles Allen, present.
Mr. Allen, you able to hear us well?
I can hear you very well, Your Honor.
Very good. Mr. Moriarty?
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court. We are here today in response to five separate orders to show cause issued by this Court. Those five orders to show cause are connected to five decisions of the Disciplinary Review Board, which represent nine separate matters which were docketed and investigated and proceeded by way of default to the Disciplinary Review Board. Each of those decisions represents a unanimous recommendation by the members of the Disciplinary Review Board recommending respondent's disbarment. Now, respondent comes before this Court with a significant disciplinary history. That disciplinary history includes nearly everything that's available for discipline in the attorney regulatory system in New Jersey. He has received non-suspensions, he has received suspensions, and he has received several fee arbitration suspensions, which, as the Court is aware, come after an attorney is ordered to repay money back to a client and fails to do so. But when we look closer at that disciplinary history, a pattern is discovered. And that pattern that is discovered is that respondent routinely has been retained to represent clients to assist them in pending legal matters. He has received sums of money from them, taken that money, and has done little or no work that he promised to do. He thereafter keeps these clients going on, making misrepresentations to them, making them promises of things that are going to happen, knowing all well that perhaps their cases were dismissed or no longer viable. Then, when the proverbial jig is up, they reach out to him, try to make contact with them, and he abandons all communication with those clients, taking the money and not cooperating with superseding counsel in the turning over the file or the returning of the retainer. Now, the Court is well aware of the history and the record here. However, there is one matter which I believe is important to note here, and that is the matter of Dorothy Schultz. Ms. Schultz was from the Midwest, and she had a promise of employment in New Jersey. She uprooted her life. She came to New Jersey. And when she came to New Jersey, unfortunately, that job was taken away from her, saying it was no longer there. She believed that she had a wrongful employment claim and sought out counsel. And she met with respondent. Now, when she met with respondent, this was November 25th, 2018. On November 19th, 2018, respondent had been suspended from the practice of law for his failure to pay a fee arbitration award. Now, on that day when he met with her, he knew he was suspended. He nonetheless met with her, promised to represent her, and quoted her a fee of $2,700. Now, why is that fee important? Because the fee arbitration award that Mr. Allen was suspended for was $2,650. He took that money from Ms. Schultz, paid back that fee arbitration award, and then moved before the Court to be reinstated to the practice of law. He thereafter filed a complaint on Ms. Schultz's behalf. When he filed that complaint, discovery began. Discovery requests were made of him that he never communicated to Ms. Schultz. She was none the wiser. Motions were filed by the adversary. The adversary moved to dismiss the complaint both with and without prejudice, all while Mr. Allen failed to follow through with it. Now, early on in this case, Mr. Allen, after exhausting that $2,700 to pay back the fee arbitration award, requested an additional $2,000 from Ms. Schultz for quote unquote deposition preparation. And when we look at the records, there were no depositions contemplated. They were in the midst of written interrogatories and the like exchanged in the civil matter. He nonetheless asked for that $2,000, not knowing any better. Ms. Schultz paid the $2,000 to him and never received anything from it. He thereafter followed his pattern that I referenced before, stopped communicating with her, didn't follow through with the case to the point where it was on the precipice of being dismissed with prejudice. At that point, Ms. Schultz took it upon herself to contact the Court, learned everything that Mr. Allen had not shared with her, and was able to have the Court allow her to proceed pro se. However, the Court requested that Mr. Allen execute a substitution of attorney, which he refused. Ultimately, Ms. Schultz represented herself and settled the case on her own for an undisclosed amount. Now, I have primarily handled respondents' matters during the past 5 years since I've been with the Office of Attorney Ethics. And at any time, as an ethics counsel will tell you, when you are the person who is the face of the Office of Attorney Ethics, particularly with cases where a repeat matters that come before, that you can sometimes get the ire of the respondent. Now, respondent has raised some issues regarding me that I wish to address with the Court in his written submission a few days prior. The first is an allegation that somehow I interfered with his retention of counsel in this matter, that being Mr. Garfinkel. As the court knows, Mr. Garfinkel is a well-experienced, well-regarded defense attorney or respondent's counsel, a man that I have had plenty of cases with. And when Mr. Allen said that he was going to be retaining him, I reached out to Mr. Garfinkel to see whether that was true based off of respondent's disciplinary history. He advised that it was, that he had not been retained, and requested that I provide him with the background of the cases, which I did, the publicly available information. That was it. Did I tell Mr. Garfinkel not to represent him? No. Would I prefer that Mr. Garfinkel represent him? Absolutely. I've had plenty of cases that we've been able to work through with Mr. Garfinkel, but I would never in any way, shape, or form ever interfere with the right to counsel of any individual. And the allegation by Mr. Allen is unfounded. The other issue that Mr. Allen has raised to the court is the issue of disability inactive. Now, approximately a year ago, after 4 years of time, Mr. Allen making reference to medical circumstances without substantiating it, he provided a medical letter to the OAE in request for an adjournment to this court of the pending, at that time, orders to show cause. Now, when he requested that, the director authorized me to provide him with a copy of a consent order to place him on disability inactive. As the court is aware, under Rule 1:20-12, the disability inactive rule, there are two parts to disability inactive. The first is the ability to practice law. Well, not to the first, but one part of it is the ability to practice law. The other is the ability to properly defend and assist counsel in this matter. There was no information provided to us in that matter that he had the inability to assist counsel or defend his matter. To the contrary, based off his adjournment request, based off of his other submissions in these matters, he has shown his ability to practice law. Nonetheless, we provided that to him because although he was suspended at that point, he still had the ability to return to practice the law. And based off of the medical circumstances in which he submitted, we believed it prudent to offer that to him for purposes of placing him on disability inactive just for the practice of law. Now, Mr. Allen has raised his issues of his medical circumstances. The OAE acknowledges and understands that he has suffered from some medical circumstances in these cases. However, as aptly noted by the Disciplinary Review Board, throughout the pendency of these matters, Mr. Allen has used that both as a shield as well as a sword. He has said that he should not be held accountable for these matters, that he should not face the consequences of these matters because of that. But he nonetheless persisted in seeking out clients, taking money from them, making promises to them, and not fulfilling those promises. There's a well-known saying that actions speak louder than words. And when we look at this case, we have to look at respondent's actions, the way in which he's dealt with his clients, the things that he has failed to do for his clients. We also need to look back to March 2022, when respondent appeared virtually before this court on another recommendation for a disbarment. And he promised the court that if he given another opportunity, he would reform his ways. I think the history of the past 2 years has shown that not to be true. As the court is aware, the primary purpose of attorney discipline is not to punish the offender, but to maintain integrity in the bar and protect the public. When we look at the facts and circumstances of this case against this court's disciplinary precedent, the only appropriate outcome is respondent's disbarment. And if the court has any questions, I would be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Moriarty.
Thank you.
Mr. Allen? I'd like to ask you a few questions relating to your medical condition before we get to the matter of the disbarment proceeding that's in front of us. Are you under the care of a physician?
Yes, I agree with physicians. My vascular issue was NYU Langone in New York City. NYU Langone Hospital, it's people them. I've had probably 10 to 15, if not more, procedures there. Prior to that, I was treated by a medical associate, lead up in Highland Park. And unfortunately, I found the recommendation of a vein in the leg.
Mr. Allen, Mr. Allen, do you have a microphone near you? Can I ask you to get a little closer to it so that the sound is a bit clearer for us?
Okay. I just moved the computer close to me. I see the lights lighting up in it.
That's better.
Is that better? Right. And back to there, they performed a surgery on me, which I'm not here to test disparagements on them. They removed major veins out of my right leg, which had I had a bleeding event in 2018. One night, my vein in the bottom of my right leg burst. And I had, I was surrounded by blood, a big puddle of blood. I was rushed to the hospital by injury. I later had a surgery where they removed veins, and that made things worse because I learned over time, your body can reroute the flow of blood if when they close one vein and it finds another way to go. But for me, it wasn't working. I had about 10 to 15 venous ablations, most of them at NYU, Langone.
Mr. Allen, forgive me for interrupting. I wasn't looking to ask you to provide the full history of your medical condition. Are you under the care of a physician in New Jersey at this time?
My physicians right now, I've been consulting with Dr. Wells Ross. I've been consulting at Edison. Although I haven't been able to get out there in a while, I've been treated by Dr. He was my regular vascular doctor, from Dr. Malik. Became director of St. Prior to that, I was treated by someone who was the renowned vascular doctor nationally, Dr. Kabnick, Lowell Kabnick. And his treatment stopped because he left NYU and I think went out on some other type of academic or something along those lines. I'm not exactly sure, but his treatment ended when he left NYU. I've been to the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota and Rochester, Minnesota, three times. Each time I was out there for a week, I was seen by many doctors. Many of your honors are familiar with how they work out there. But when you go, they require that you're there for at least a week. They prove, they set up a general doctor, the specialist doctor. I mean, they even had a nutritionist and other specialists out there over that week. The last time I was out there was shortly before the pandemic hit.
Excuse me, Mr. Allen. Come back to the first doctor that you mentioned from New Jersey. How do you spell that doctor's name?
Dr. Wells Ross.
Can you spell the doctor's name for us?
W-E-L-L-S, second word, R-O-T-H.
And when was it that you last either saw or spoke with Dr. Wells Roth?
I'd have to check my calendar, Your Honor. I don't know the exact date, but it was a little while back.
Can you give us an estimate as to when that was?
I had an appointment about 2 or 3 weeks ago.
And did you see him in person around that time?
Yes.
Did you interact with members of his staff recently as well, or no?
When I asked for the letter, yes.
The judiciary contacted Dr. Wells Roth's office last week. We neither asked for nor received any of your medical records or information about your medical condition or health issues. But we were told that you have not been a patient of that practice since January of 2023, a year and a half ago. Is that correct?
No, what I was not a patient of was the pain doctor. The pain doctor was, it's one firm, and it's called Redefine Health. And they discharged me because they wanted me to have a sleep study, and the insurance wouldn't pay for it, and I couldn't afford to pay for it myself. That was Dr. Sorrell.
So you have not been a patient of Redefine Healthcare. What about Premier Brain and Spine?
I think Premier Brain and Spine, I get confused on that. They changed the name. I think they may, Premier Brain and Spine. I went to Dr. Wells Roth had, he practices in different places. I've also gone to other neurologists for other opinions. I also treated Dr. Rao, R-A-O, in New Brunswick.
Where did you last see 2 or 3 weeks ago Dr. Wells Roth?
Edison.
And you submitted some letters from Dr. Wells Roth in connection with your recent requests for an adjournment. One is dated May 21st, 2024, which says in part, "Mr. Allen has been my patient since January 10th of 2022. Most recently, he suffered additional serious and debilitating ischemic strokes in March and April of 2024. I strongly advise and urge that Mr. Allen remain out of work and avoid all stress for at least the next 3 months." And it is signed Dr. David Wells, W-E-L-L-S, Roth. And more recently, you submitted a letter dated June 18th of 2024, just last week, which says in part, "Mr. Allen has been my patient since January 10th, 2022. Last week, he blacked out and fell on stairs. He must remain out of all work and professional activities for at least 90 days. In addition to the neurological issues that I am treating, I did observe severe edema and swelling in his legs and feet." And this is signed Dr. David Weiss Roth, W-E-I-S Roth, with the physician's last name spelled differently than the physician you've identified for us. Can you tell the court who prepared the letter that you submitted dated last week?
I don't know who prepared it. I called and I asked for a letter and they sent that to me.
And who is it that you spoke with when you asked for the letter?
It was a female. I don't have a name.
How did you contact them?
By telephone.
And did you see Dr. Wells Roth in person? Is that what you're telling us between the May and the June letters?
I saw Dr. Wells Roth, it was, I believe, in May.
Can you explain the contradiction based on what we heard from the two offices that Dr. Wells Roth is affiliated with, both of which appear on the letters you submitted, and your representation that he's still seeing you, even though they tell us he's not?
I don't know about that. I'd have to contact their office to find out. I think that may come from the discharge of... I think I have an email or a fax or a text message from them confirming my appointment. On my cell phone, I've got confirmations of appointments. And I can send that to the court. I can send you text message confirming the appointment.
Let's move on. Does anyone have any additional questions with respect to the letters?
You indicated in response to the Chief Justice's questions that you were in person at the office 2 to 3 weeks ago when you asked for the letter. So were you in person asking for the letter and the letter was provided to you while you were at the office? Or was it a phone call? Because earlier you said you were there in Edison in person 2 to 3 weeks ago and interacted with his staff when you asked for the letter.
So when you come out of the examining room, there's a counter there. There was somebody there. I had asked for the letter. I didn't receive it. I called back to follow up by telephone and it was sent to me. I don't know who typed it. I didn't go back in to get it. They sent it to me. And when I received it, I sent it to the court. I mean, I received that letter. That's anybody suggesting anything otherwise, that's not correct. I mean, I think there was an issue with me being discharged from treatment with the pain center. But Dr. Wells Roth works both with the pain center and with the, I guess, in his own practice somewhere else in New Jersey.
The letters you submitted have two entities listed, Redefine Healthcare and Premier Brain and Spine, both of which have advised the court you have not been a patient since January of 2023. Can you explain that?
I was not a patient of the pain doctor. I did see Dr. Wells Roth. I'm going to clarify that with them.
What's the date on the text that you referred to?
I have to look at my phone. I got to go through a lot of text messages here.
Why don't we move on? As to okay, the...
I can provide that.
As to the question of disbarment that is before the court, you've defaulted on all these matters, and is it correct that you have not submitted any defense on the merits of the charges throughout these proceedings?
I did not submit any defenses at... Well, I mean, that's I feel horrible that I wasn't able to defend them. But after I got suspended in May 2022, I mean, everything went south on me medically. I've just been unable to respond. It's both mental and it's both physical. I've been in tremendous pain. I was prescribed painkillers, among other things. I was prescribed OxyContin and oxycodone. I was on OxyContin for about 2 years until the insurance stopped covering it and I couldn't afford it. But I was on oxycodone for approximately 5 years. If my research me correct, I made a decision that I didn't want to take that anymore. And my pain levels became intolerable. However, I had a couple of occasions where I was short, for one day or 2 days before my prescription renewed, and the withdrawals that I had because of it were horrible. And I just didn't want to have that happen again. So I got off of that. I took something called Suboxone for a short while to wean me off of the oxycodone. I don't take any of those things now.
Mr. Allen, what would you like to present to the court in the next few moments about this disbarment matter?
Okay, well, firstly, apologize. And I feel horrible and I'm embarrassed by the fact that I didn't respond. I practiced a number of years uneventfully, with the exception of what happened in 2005, which was a circumstance where a stipulation dismissal that was supposed to be for one complaint didn't by that. And the entire matter was this. I think we got it in state. There was no harm done to the client, but I was disciplined for it. In 2014, my health circumstances only went south. I ended up with an inverter card. Happened to be my cousin.
Try to get closer to the mic, please.
And I ended up handling it completely on my own. It took a great toll on me. I think that's what led to the bleeding event in 2018. And you know, I started being treated for vascular issues prior to that, but I got so many different recommendations from doctors. But as the time went by, my health worsened. And it affected. I was just in a position where if I stopped working, I had a mortgage to pay. And I know what the rule says now. I've been made very aware of it. But I was a sole owner in my home with a mortgage and everything else to pay. And I had no choice but to continue to work. I did my best. I did represent people effectively. I have a lot of clients who I have an opportunity to come forward before the court and explain to the court the effective representation that I provided. But as it worsened, my caseload did diminish. After that murder trial, I developed great financial difficulties. And it was a struggle. Now, I'll give, for example, Dorothy Schultz. I disagree with the presentation that was given by Mr. Gloriarty. Yes, I did represent Dorothy Schultz. And yes, we did get additional funds from her for depositions. But what he neglected to tell you is that depositions had been noticed. Before we got to the point of depositions being taken, she discharged me. Now, she didn't move to New Jersey just for the lawsuit. She moved to New Jersey for the job. She lived in apartments over on Route 18 in New Brunswick prior to coming in and retaining my services, as far as I remember. Also, I remember her living. I remember her telling me as we were on our phone conversation that she looked out the window and she saw wild turkey walking around on the grounds of the apartment complex, or whatever that's worth. But I did, complaints were drafted, they were served, we engaged in some discovery. I did discuss discovery with her. In fact, I recall my stepson got married, I was in California, and I engaged in the telephone conversation with her about the discovery, to get the discovery answered and spoke on the other side. So not all of that is true. Now, again, I didn't defend myself. However, I respectfully submit that it was because of the medical circumstances. And what I'm seeking here today really is to be put on a medical inactive status. If I can discuss that for a moment. Back in 2022, Mr. Moriarty is the one who initiated the disability inactive status. The disability inactive status was raised by him. He sent me a consent order. I was already suspended at that point. So what else could this disability inactive status pertain to other than the only things that I run the plate for me to deal with, which were the ethics matters? My understanding was that the ethics matters were stayed based on that consent order that he's initiated, obviously agreed to it, he drafted it. He then come out later on and said, no, it doesn't pertain to the ethics matters. It pertains to you practicing. But I wasn't practicing, I was suspended. So that doesn't make any sense. It seemed, understood that it covered everything. And when doctors are telling me, and there's many prior letters, I have a lot of letters from doctors over the years. So I don't understand how he's saying that he didn't know about my medical circumstances. I didn't know the degree of them. But there are tons of letters from doctors, from the Mayo Clinic, from my vascular doctor, from Dr. Rao in New Brunswick, from other doctors, from Highland Park Medical Associates. Other dot letters that came from the pain doctor, and so on. So it's well documented. In fact, the person who handled cases with me prior to Mr. Moriarty was well aware of that. It's been going on for quite some time. And what I'm asking for is to be put on medical or disability inactive status. And I don't know if I'll ever be able to come back again. I don't know if I'm going to get over all this medical stuff. I hope to. I'd like to have the incentive to do that. And the only incentive that I would have is maybe one day I can get better and the court, your honorable court, would find in your hearts to give me another chance. I currently use three medical machines, so to speak. I have a lymphedema pump that I use three times a day. I have an issue with my lower side of my back that they determined was not structural. So I'm going to be going to testing this deep. I haven't been able to, my kidney hasn't happened yet. But there's a machine that they have is for stretching the back. I have another one that's a form of massage. It's all meant to get the blood flowing again, because the biggest problem I have, and everything, and all the medical circumstances that I've suffered have come from poor blood flow, which started with the vascular issue. And as I said, I've had 10 to 15, if not more, venous ablations for, I think it's called thrombosis and severe vascular disease. I have that going into an artery on the left side of my abdomen, coming out of what's called the iliac vein, going into the artery that goes into. I was diagnosed by Dr. Wells Ross with ischemic stroke. And that goes back with that initial diagnosis we made a while back. And they don't know. I could have suffered ischemic strokes in the past. They can only speculate on that from what I understand. But they can see signs in there that I've had that. My sight has been affected by it. I have continual problem with my left eye. They thought it was dry eye, but now I think it's something more than that. I've been to the Willis Eye Hospital down in Philadelphia for that. I've been treated by the eye specialist over by Menlo Park Shopping Mall in Edison for that. And I also have an eye doctor who happens to be in Edison, both doctors, Dr. Dogan and Dr. Lee. Dr. Dogan, it's his practice, and Dr. Lee also works for him. I didn't come here to ask to be able to start practicing again now. I'm simply asking that whatever the discipline that is given to me, it's short of this part.
We understand your request. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Probably a lot, but let me look at my notes that I made here. The fact that I did little to no work on cases is not correct. When I'm unable to afford counsel, I handled the matter myself. At one point, another attorney who's also a friend of mine named Jack Venturi agreed to help me. We had a couple meetings. I gave him the underlying files, and unfortunately, he died. He passed away.
This is the information you put in the recent letter you sent to the court?
Yes.
So we do have that in writing, and we understand the information you've conveyed.
And then what's the issue now? Well, I wasn't part of the conversation between Garth Finkel and Mr. Moriarty. But it went from me delivering $3,500 to Mr. Mark Finkel as a retainer to I'm not going to represent. And the only thing that happened in between those two circumstances was the conversation with Mr. Moriarty. That's the only thing that.
Mr. Allen, I think we have your position.
Okay, I appreciate that, Your Honor. I just feel this is my life. I mean, without this, I know it's not the standard. You're concerned more about clients. This is all I have. I'm 60 years old, and when I lose this, I become unemployable. I'm just asking for a chance. If I be put on the disability and active status, I still have to come back before the court and apply a reinstatement. I put my medical, I would imagine medical documentation to show that I can work, show that I've improved. And that's an unknown right now. But I'm simply asking for the dignity of the disability and active status. I would remain unable to work. As I understand, I can't do any legal work, including anything at all, which I haven't done and I won't do. I've honored the suspension that was given to me. I haven't worked. It'll be 2 years next month from the time that I got the indefinite suspension. And I just want a chance that maybe one day I can have a hope of being able to come back, get better and come back and practice. I have a lot of clients that I represented over the years who I got very good results for and that were very happy with the work tonight. And I just wasn't able to follow through on getting letters from them, but I have clients right now well, and for an opportunity to provide those to you.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. We have your position. The court will take this under advisement.